You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
What's the buzz? Tell me what's happening. It's What's the Buzz, our weekly chat with the New Zealand Drug Foundation.
So, to start off with, you mentioned there had been a bunch of emerging cases regarding people being arrested for medicinal use and supply of cannabis at the moment. So would you like to maybe start by touching on those?
Yeah, look, it's really upsetting to hear. We're getting direct reports of people coming to us to let us know. We've heard from some criminal lawyers and medicinal cannabis sort of patients groups that we're hearing of people being arrested, and there was a case on Radio New Zealand yesterday of people who are supplying medicinal cannabis and or using medicinal cannabis for themselves. It's really quite upsetting because I don't think that many people would be of the view that medicinal cannabis users should be convicted in this day and age at this point of our understanding of cannabis use and its medicinal properties. And also those people have now, you know, not only those people are facing convictions, but the people who are relying on the supply from the supplier who's been arrested have lost their access to what may be for them essential medicines. So it's really quite concerning.
So, sorry, just to double check, are we talking about people who are obtaining and supplying medicinal cannabis legally or on the black market?
What is technically illegal? So at the moment you can get a prescription for medicinal cannabis products. It's a little bit limited, so, and it's very, very hard to access. So there's a few problems with accessing it through the legal channel. I am a medicinal cannabis user myself. I have CBD oil. I have a form of autoimmune arthritis, and it has changed my life. I can move and walk. It's really incredible. And it has no side effects, or not for me anyway. Basically, it's very hard to get a doctor to prescribe it, both because of stigma, but also because they don't know how to prescribe it. They're not sure what to do. Then if you're lucky enough to get a prescription, it's hundreds of dollars, depending on the product you need. So if you're a CBD oil user, it can be between about $230 to $350 a month. If you need something more specialist like Sativex, so maybe you have, is it multiple sclerosis, Carly, and yep, epilepsy and so forth, those products are more like $1,000 a month, so they're not funded at all. So you can imagine that is out of the reach of most ordinary people, especially ordinary people who are suffering from chronic illness and disability. And so people are turning to the black market, and we have out there suppliers of medicinal cannabis products that are some of them, not all of them, and definitely black market is not a reliable source, but some of them have been shown to have good products. There was one in the New Zealand Herald recently that is up north called Gandalf, and he produces medicinal products that are of very high quality. And so it is possible to produce these things yourselves. So people are turning to the black market because they have no other options, or because for some other reason, maybe they feel alienated from the health system. Technically it's still illegal.
Okay, so do you believe that medicinal cannabis that's being obtained and supplied in the black market should fall under police's discretion when it comes to charging and convicting?
Yeah, so you're right. It comes under that discretion amendment that was made in 2019. So the police are allowed to choose not to prosecute if it's in the public interest and take more of a health-based approach. However, it is up to their discretion. We obviously, we want cannabis decriminalised, or legalised actually, but decriminalised at the least, full stop. But particularly for medicinal products, it seems pretty cruel and heartless to keep medicinal products out of the hands of most people, then if they turn to the black market to criminalise. I mean, I can just imagine the fear that patients will be facing who were accessing, or who are or were accessing those products. The same with the suppliers right now. They must be scared, and you know they're already living with chronic illness.
So just quickly, do you have any theories as to why the police didn't use their discretion to not charge these people?
Yeah, I was just going to add on that discretion thing. So the police have a discretion not to prosecute for small quantities. If someone possesses a small quantity of drugs, they cannot prosecute. But if they've got a large quantity, or if they've been growing cannabis to make into products or medicines, then that discretion isn't applied. So while, in fact, the police do have a discretion, they're not instructed to use it in the public interest like they are with small quantities, if that makes sense. So what you have is some police, if they find a person with 50 plants who's using it for medicine, they'll just turn a blind eye, and another police officer in another district of New Zealand will actually convict that person. So it's really, it's not consistent at the moment. It's very unfair. And the big issue then, of course, is that the person's medicines are all destroyed and that they're left sort of with nothing to treat their conditions with, which is awful.
So I feel like that moves us on to the other point that we wanted to talk about today, which was law reform, drug law reform in this country. So shall we start off by maybe looking at some of the more problematic hindering parts of the current legislation?
Well, we would almost start with the idea, I mean, and we should cover what you've just said, but the Misuse of Drugs Act is old. It was written in 1975, and that was the year I was born. And I can tell you, I'm getting a bit old on it. So it's 45, 46 years old now. And a lot has happened in those 45, 46 years. For starters, we've had decades of seeing the punitive approach to drugs fail to make an impact. So we know that convictions do nothing to deter use. So instead of helping people, we are piling on harms onto some of the people who are experiencing some of the most harms in society anyway. And during that time, the law has been amended a million times. Probably Carly can tell you the specific number. Obviously, it wasn't actually a million times. At its core, it is a punitive model. So we think that we need a new law that is based on a health-based approach that aims to create wellness and reduce harm rather than sort of that old-fashioned don't do it, lock it up, ban it, and that'll fix everything.
So in addition to it being generally rubbish, there are some specifics that are particularly annoying. And well, I mean, one of them obviously is that you can still get a conviction for drug use, which doesn't help the person who's using drugs to stop, doesn't reduce harm in any way, but it can impact a person's life really negatively. Then there are other things, for example, if you're caught with slightly more than a tiny amount, you can often be done for supply, even if it was actually just for your own use. So someone who is using heavily or maybe is addicted to, say, methamphetamine may well be done for supply under this law. And I've talked to many people in prison who've had that exact same thing happen to them and are then put in prison for some years. And what they really needed was a health intervention. There's other things like the classification. So you've got a classification system for drugs, which is supposed to be done according to the harm that they cause, so class A, B or C. And in fact, it's not at all evidence-based. It's just almost random.
Also with that classification system, I mean, even if you did take a punitive model, you would ideally have some scope for lower harm drugs, perhaps not carrying any punishment attached to them if they were scientifically proven to be very low harm.
That's right. And we've got this other act called the Psychoactive Substances Act, which is supposed to regulate lower harm drugs for sale, and that just doesn't work at all. And we'd like to see that brought into the Misuse of Drugs Act, so we would have that a class D maybe substance that was actually very low harm indeed and could be regulated for sale.
So there are many areas of our drug laws which seem like they need a very kind of complete overhaul. I mean, what would the best way for this to be enacted be? Because obviously Andrew Little has come out the other week saying that any changes to drug laws would have to go through a referendum. Do you think that this is something that the public could easily get on board with?
Yeah, look, we don't agree with that approach. What I would say is that there's a diversity of opinion across government, and I'm still hopeful that we'll see some reform of our drug laws. Not to say that I know that that's the case, but I'm, continually optimistic, because it's at this point in time, it feels to me that the public understand that our approach to drugs and cannabis in particular isn't working, and that it's a matter of rather when we're going to amend our drug laws. In the meantime, people continue to be harmed, and so we want urgency around it. We had a referendum, and we all know the result of that referendum. It was very, very close, and the legalisation of cannabis, the specific law that was proposed, lost by a small percentage. So it was almost 50-50, although it did lose, so I just acknowledge that. But we have, of the people who voted against that law, about 39% of them, according to a survey conducted by the Helen Clark Foundation and UMR, actually support decriminalisation. So there's actually not necessarily, that referendum was on a specific law, and to interpret it so broadly as to say that, or you therefore can't change any drug laws, is disingenuous to what the intention of the referendum was.
Do you think that referendum was trying to do a bit too much?
Perhaps if we could go back in time, it was very specific. So instead of testing a general statement, it tested a very specific model. It's a model that we got in behind because we thought it was good, a better practice for public health. But it was perhaps a bridge too far for a lot of people, and that's the 39% who voted no, but perhaps support decriminalisation. I think for them it was a bridge too far. Either they didn't like the specific model, they didn't like the idea of it being sold in stores, they'd heard some of the misinformation from the no camp around it being sold in dairies, which was never the case, by the way. So voted it down, but perhaps are supportive of people not being criminalised for their use, or maybe supportive of a slightly extended decrim model where people are allowed small quantities.
So would you like to see the government sort of take a stand and decide that they will reform drug laws without a referendum, so perhaps starting with decriminalisation, which I feel like will probably be the most palatable for, the 50%, well, just over 50% of New Zealanders who are still not comfortable with cannabis being fully legal?
We elect governments to make these decisions for us, and we have a robust process in our democratic system with select committees and so forth that allow for public input. And so that's the process we think that they should go through, and that they should base it on evidence rather than just polls and opinions. It has to be an evidence-based approach. And we've had people, official documents calling for this reform for more than a decade now. So the Law Commission, over 10 years ago now, could you elaborate on this, please, Carly?
Yes.
I started a thought.
In 2011, the Law Commission did a really comprehensive report, several hundred pages
on the misuse of drugs.
on the need to reform the Misuse of Drugs Act and how it had really had its time, and that was 10 years ago. And they proposed decriminalisation of all drugs, essentially, or depenalisation/decriminalisation, and they proposed regulating lower harm substances. And that's where the Psychoactive Substances Act kind of came out of, but unfortunately that hasn't worked. So we've got a bunch of recommendations which haven't been put into play yet 10 years later.
So. Yeah, and it's sort of relied on that similar approach to what's been going for over 20 years now in Portugal. So we're not talking about, super cutting edge stuff at this point in time. It's been happening in different places around the world. And Portugal's had it for 20 years. They've had a decriminalised model, and there's health interventions attached to when people are picked up with substances. You've got other really interesting examples like Switzerland with the heroin. where they have basically put in a health-based approach around heroin and seen incredible results. So we're not talking about super risky stuff here. We're talking about evidenced approaches to drug policy, and that's what the Drug Foundation support. We don't support liberalisation for the sake of it. I think one of the problems is that people who are morally opposed to drugs think that by decriminalising or giving some permission to it, you're somehow encouraging use. And that is not our position at all, and that is not what the evidence shows. So it's definitely not about promoting use. It's about shifting away from a harmful model that's not doing anything to address drug harm or drug use.
Now, I would like to spend a little bit of time talking about the health-based approach that countries such as Portugal and Switzerland have taken. Do you think an approach like this would suit this country and suit, like, drug use in this country?
I just say there's lots of countries and states that are jumping on this bandwagon now. So we've had changes in Malta, Mexico, Canada, a number of states in the United States, and a couple of states in Australia as well. So we're seeing quite a lot of change happening around the world. Norway just voted down a proposal, but it looks like they'll be reconsidering. So Carly, do you want to talk about New Zealand?
Well, also Portugal. As Sarah said, brought that in 20 years ago, and they have a civil system rather than a criminal system around drug use for small quantities. So if you're caught with drugs, you get sent to a civil panel, which is, you know, a social worker and some other people who sit on a panel and just check, are you using regularly, do you need assistance with your drug use, and so on. And if they judge that you do, then you are offered some treatment and so on. So it's quite a cool model, but the problem with it is that every single person who uses drugs has to have that, you know, intervention, which actually is probably not needed in the majority of cases. So it's a great model, but I think we would probably want to tweak it. It's been 20 years, and I know the chief policy officer from Portugal had quite a lot of suggestions for improving that and bringing that, you know, forward. So we'd want to design something that works really well in New Zealand. We'd want to make sure that it's really easy to get into health treatment, harm reduction at any point of the system. I think that's essential. We'd want to make sure that the model we put in place was really great, worked really well for Māori as well, because they're the ones on the sharp end of drug law enforcement. Yeah, in New Zealand.
Just quickly, if we were to see something like that implemented, would we need to now start seeing more investment into harm reduction programs?
Yeah. I mean, we're calling up for it now. We'd love to see a shift away from spending all of that money incarcerating people and putting it into health-based interventions. We're calling for an increase in treatment funding. But as we've discussed in previous episodes of this, is there's virtually no harm reduction initiatives, aside from our new drug checking stuff, along the spectrum of use. So we want to see some more health interventions before people get in trouble with drug use.
This is The Wire, and that was What's the Buzz with the New Zealand Drug Foundation.
Why should you want to know?
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.